Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. U.S. equities had another positive week. The S&P 500 was up all five sessions last week. Good earnings, positive economic data, and further optimism about the potential for trade deals provided the market with tailwinds. The question is whether this can continue or will headwinds resume. So joining us to discuss this all today, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, dialing in from overseas for this Monday morning. Jason, thank you for spending some time with our listeners and clients to begin another trading week. It's nice to have you back.
Good morning, Dan, and good afternoon from Zurich. Good to be here from other parts of the world today.
So there's a lot to talk about, Jason. I mentioned that the S&P 500 has been up now for nine straight days. Let's begin with recent market momentum. What do you think is driving the markets higher?
Well, you kind of gave a bit of a tease to what my answer would be with your opening comments. I'd point to a few factors that have been really lifting the markets higher. One is kind of incremental optimism on sort of trade deals being completed, or at least you know, the frameworks of deals and sort of, you know, understandings of what that entailed. You know, actual formal deals may take many months, but certainly signals from the Trump administration continue to kind of point in that direction, point in the direction of a willingness to, you know, take actions that would ultimately kind of bring down the effective tariff rate. And that's what is kind of critical, you know, to the markets. So that optimism and moving in that direction kind of certainly is provided the markets with a little bit of a tailwind. On the economic front, you know, the data has continued to be, you know, relatively solid. We got a good jobs report for April on Friday. So I think, you know, there's your concerns about a slowdown and potential recession. Well, that risk certainly still exists. You know, the data thus far and bottom line suggest still some sort of resiliency. The earnings for S&P 500 companies, and we got a number of companies report last week, now almost 40% of the market cap. And the overall story for earnings is, have been, I describe it as solid, you know, certainly not a lot of signs of disappointment related that would be, you know, related to tariffs in some way. So, you know, lack of negative news in some ways is a positive on the earnings front. The same would apply to the economy. And then there is certainly, you know, a technical factor that's driving the markets higher. We're seeing a situation where certain investors, for example, hedge funds that had, you know, de-risked that also had short positions on, one of the first things they're doing is closing their kind of short positions. So there's certain kind of short cover in the markets as downside tail risks, you know, start to get mitigated by, you know, different policy actions from the Trump administration. So that's certainly helping. Then you have various sort of strategies that are more systematic based that are de-risked. In some way now they're being forced to chase the markets higher. One example is vol targeting strategies that, you know, as volatility rises, they have to reduce leverage, have to reduce their risk exposure. Volatility surged into early April, and now really for the past in 10 days, if you look at a, you know, the 10-day volatility, realized volatility for the S&P 500 is actually lower than it was at the end of March. So it's kind of fully retraced, you know, its rise. As that happens, then these strategies will systematically kind of lever up at exposure. So there's a technical bid also helping the markets. So the combination of, you know, economic and earnings fundamentals being okay, fine, you're not spectacular, but certainly not bad, you know, commentary from the policy front from President Trump and other people in the administration that suggest, you know, progress is being made towards some sort of trade deals. And then these technical factors, all that's contributed to the, you know, been a pretty remarkable bounce back in the S&P 500 over the past few weeks.
So with that, Jason, let's focus in now on the state of the U.S. economy. We're coming off a week where we saw some notable releases accounting for Q1 GDP. We had the latest jobs report released this past Friday. What does the latest data say about the state of the economy with some tariffs now in place?
Well, let's start just with actual kind of growth rates. We did get Q1 GDP data last week. It came in at minus 1.4%, so negative number, but a lot of that was due to essentially front-running tariffs as a lot of imports came into the country. The way GDP accounting works is that if you're importing more but exporting the same amount, then your net exports gets even more negative. That is mechanically a drag on overall GDP growth. If you look at kind of private sector, you know, final demand or real consumption growth, those numbers are relatively strong in Q1, you know, growing, you know, between 1.5% and 2%. Definitely some moderation from last year and from the fourth quarter, but if we think that's a cleaner measure of the state of the U.S. economy, that indicated that the consumer overall is holding up reasonably well. We also then got the April payrolls report. The headline number was better than expected by about 38,000, coming at 177,000. The prior 2 months had been revised lower by almost equal amounts. So on net, you could say kind of in line with expectations, but still in real time, where you might start to think you'd see some weakness in the labor market stemming from tariffs, at least as it for April, that wasn't necessarily evident in the data. And the unemployment rate, kind of held steady around 4.2%. So the overall picture from the labor market still suggests it remains relatively solid. Hiring is moderating, but also firing remains and layoffs remain quite contained. So it's a little bit of a holding pattern for the labor market overall. The other data, like the ISM Manufacturing Index, it was in contractionary territory, but it was better than expected. In general, so hard data, things like payrolls, retail sales, durable goods orders, that data has been generally kind of surprising to the upside for the past month or so. So that's the good news. The sentiment continues to get worse, but we've seen this sort of gap between hard and soft data in the past. Now, a lot of the data could be dismissed as somewhat backward-looking. It reflects where the economy has been, especially Q1 GDP. It doesn't reflect yet the actual impact of much higher tariffs than the economy's experienced in many years. And so, therefore, investors might be tempted to sort of discount that. But I think it is important in this context to know that as the meat of the tariffs start to kick in, they potentially go higher. If the economy entered in this period of uncertainty in relatively good hands, in good strength in terms of demand by the private sector, kind of job growth is relatively solid, real incomes are generally kind of rising. So it does provide ballast and sort of a buffer for the economy overall. So, the takeaway is that you have an economy that we classify as resilient, but it certainly points to potentially kind of slow down, based on the consequences of the tariffs. But so far it's been, a relatively decent story for the U.S. economy this year, despite all the tariff concerns.
So, Jason, I do want to tie into our conversation your latest blog. The title is What If? Within, you do suggest that it would be a mistake to dismiss the upside case of U.S. growth, even in the face of higher tariffs. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, we think about this kind of U.S. exceptionalism story. It's something we talked about on the podcast last week, where I suggested that at least by one dimension of U.S. exceptionalism, that's likely to sort of fade this year. And that was the level of actual GDP growth that we saw the last 2 years at nearly 3% versus, take a region like the Eurozone, that was at 0.6%. Really large discrepancy. This year, that gap is likely to be much narrower with, us expecting around 1% growth in the U.S., around 75 basis points in the Eurozone. So kind of narrowing that gap. And directionally, it's true that that gap is going to narrow. But the kind of consensus view that most economists have, that most investors would have, is that the U.S. economy is going to slow because the tariffs and inflation is going to go higher, so that you could either have a recession or at least a stagflationary, outcome. But what I ask in the blog is like, well, what if we're kind of wrong about this? What if it turns out the economy is impacted, but it's relatively modest, that it doesn't really kind of go down the path of being somewhat stagflationary? Are we overestimating the likelihood of these other things and underestimating the possibility that things could actually be, okay on an upside scenario? And I think it's kind of worth asking that because I'm certainly experiencing some kind of deja vu from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where the consensus view, pretty broad consensus was that the U.S. economy is going to go into recession. Inflation's high. The Fed has to raise rates aggressively. They will. That's going to cause a recession. And even after Silicon Valley Bank went under, there was concerns about, credit growth would be materially slow. That's going to be another drag on the economy. Then a recession certainly seemed quite likely. Not only did a recession not happen in 2023, 2024, but growth kind of far exceeded expectations. So I think we have to have some humility as investors, as those who kind of forecast the economy, about our ability to predict how things exactly will play out with the U.S. economy. And just given the experience from the past couple of years. Now, one could kind of point out that what happened during that two to three year time period of why there was no recession, there are certain attributes of the U.S. economy, some of which may persist, some may not, which is kind of why there's this kind of upside scenario. And we know that one of the reasons why the economy did not experience recession is that household finances, the balance sheet of the private sector was in pristine shape. really strong balance sheets, a lot of excess savings, a lot of ability to continue spending, even despite, you know, rates going higher. Household balance sheets are in good shape, but they're not quite in pristine shape the way they were before, and there's certainly less cushion to deal with, you know, higher prices of goods, you know, higher inflation and potential kind of slowdown in the economy, but, you know, not terrible. The Federal Reserve had policy that was, we think, would be restrictive, and that should slow the economy, but within hindsight, we suggest that the policy wasn't that restrictive, that sort of the Fed neutral rate had probably drifted higher, and therefore would seem like a high policy rate that was restrictive at almost 5.5%. Turns out perhaps that wasn't. You know, the Fed has been easing, and perhaps that has you know, made policy less restrictive. The Fed's likely to be behind the curve, meaning they'll be reactive to weakness in the economy, not proactively cutting before the weakness materializes. That is certainly one change. Another change between now and a few years ago was that there's a massive positive labor supply story due to immigration. That allowed the economy to grow faster without being inflationary. And that sort of labor supply story has certainly changed. And in fact, it may even work the other way if deportations of immigrants were to, you know, to pick up. So those things have kind of, you know, changed that were maybe or not as favorable. And one of the reasons why there was no recession. But the thing that I really would want to focus on, why there could be sort of an upside scenario or less damage to the economy from tariffs, and people call like a dynamism X factor. And the way I think of it is that the economy's ability to adjust in fairly close to real time between imbalances between supply and demand, that's underappreciated. You know, prices can adjust it very quickly. It's what I kind of call the Uberification of the economy. You think of like Uber, like, you know, surge pricing. When there's a big demand on a Saturday night, you know, the prices rise, it cools demand. It also induces more potential drivers to go out and offer their services. Supply increases in large parts of the economy. The ability for prices to adjust, you know, fairly quickly, you know, it can happen in a way that did not exist 30, 40 years ago. So the ability to rebalance very quickly supply and demand means the economy can kind of get back into balance, kind of grow steadily while inflation doesn't get out of hand. Now, that's hard to quantify, like what exactly the effect is, but I think it's certainly something that is, you know, that we have to kind of keep in mind. And there is, I call this more of the upside risk, that perhaps the economy, you know, won't be as damaged as much by tariffs as investors and certainly economists, you know, fear at this point in time. There's likely to be some hit to growth, and it's likely to be, you know, hit to inflation going higher. But some of these, you know, scenarios that investors are worried about, perhaps that's a little bit overdone. So that is something that's important to think about. And, well, it's hard to describe exactly what the markets are pricing. The fact that they've, you know, risen 9 straight days is implicit, at least sort of perhaps recognition that the economy could actually be okay and better than people were fearing just, you know, a few weeks ago. So I think that whole, you know, dynamic is, you know, it's kind of what I think it's something to kind of to keep in mind as we kind of observe the markets, think about where they're headed, that there is an upside scenario. It's not just, you know, kind of all downside based off of the negative implications of tariffs on the U.S. economy.
Jason, as it relates to the economy, we have to account for corporate earnings. We're continuing to make our way through the Q1 earnings season, coming off of a big week of reporting last week. From your vantage point, what are some notable takeaways from the Q1 earnings so far?
Well, we've had about 75% of the S&P 500 market cap report. You know, 40% of that was last week. And what it looks like so far, and this is probably likely to be close to the final numbers, is that corporate profits for the S&P 500 are likely to grow about 9% in the quarter. I know that's much better than what our team was expecting, which is initially was 5%. Nearly about 60% of the companies are beating on sales estimates, while 70% are beating on earnings estimates, and both of those are just slightly softer than historical average. So I would have thought a knockout fantastic quarter. But again, given the concerns about tariffs, we're not seeing a lot of evidence yet of tariffs really having a negative impact on earnings overall. On a more forward-looking basis, of course, you would expect that tariffs will have it. But there's only been a handful of companies that have actually, you know, stopped giving guidance at all. And those, you know, that continue to provide guidance, it has still been reasonably good. You know, we do see analysts revising their earnings estimates lower. Kind of what's happening this far for the S&P 500 overall, you know, that sort of downgrade for the S&P 500 earnings is pretty consistent with normal patterns. It's not sort of out of the ordinary. So again, if you just look at the data that we have thus far, it doesn't, you know, signal any indication if there's a dramatic development going on with tariffs that could, you know, negatively impact earnings. The other sort of, you know, real major takeaway from the earnings season is what's happened with kind of the AI theme. what we've heard and seen thus far is that all the AI kind of fundamentals remain in track. We've seen this from companies like, you know, Facebook or Meta specifically. You know, they are increasing their capital expenditure guidance, and they're talking about, you know, the management team is talking about, in many ways, they're using AI to improve the efficiency and enhance their offerings. Microsoft, you know, kind of quelled some concerns about their expenditure plans for this year and next year. But their cloud business is doing, you know, very well. It exceeds expectations by quite a bit. So overall, the story for AI in sort of the kind of the Mag 7 is the positive result. It is a thesis that has been kind of pushed to the back burner while investors have been focusing on tariffs. And even if we go back earlier in the year, you know, the news about DeepSeek, you know, the Chinese AI company, that kind of called into question the uniqueness and the, you know, the return potential from U.S. AI models and all this AI CapEx spending. You know, what these companies reported suggest that, like, you know, that those concerns have been a little bit overdone. But these are still strong, quality companies that have been able to continue to push forward on the AI team. So no real change there. The only other thing I sort of mentioned is that for the consumer overall, I think the picture's a little bit more mixed. Your MasterCard and Visa, you know, have a pretty broad view of the overall consumer landscape, and they're saying that spending is you know, kind of, you know, is resilient, but we don't get consumer companies reporting until later in May, and that will give a cleaner read on how consumer spending is holding up overall. And similarly, we'll get other data, more broad data in terms of retail sales, you know, for April later in May to give an indication of where the consumer is. But for the bottom line to take away from 1Q earnings season thus far, it's, you know, better than investors feared, suggesting, you know, so far that companies continue to show, you know, relatively healthy, you know, profit growth. And the trends going forward are kind of consistent with typical kind of patterns throughout the earnings season. Nothing that would suggest a dramatic drop-off is about to happen because of the tariffs.
In terms of what investors should be doing at the moment, Jason, let's end with asset allocation. What are your current recommendations from the Chief Investment Office?
Well, we've had a very good run for 2 weeks for U.S. equities. You know, but I think, you know, it's not going to move up in a straight line. And already given the rise, when we look at valuations, even with a solid earnings season, you know, U.S. stocks are still relatively expensive. And there's a lot of, I wouldn't say good news, but certainly not a, you know, a lot of negative news been priced in after the past couple weeks where, you know, tariff concerns and trade deals have been sort of talked about. The economic data has been, you know, okay thus far. We haven't seen yet a lot of economic, you know, pain, you know, showing up because of tariffs. Yet it'd be wrong to assume that there won't be something that materializes. You know, it still would be my base case and our base case that, you know, U.S. economy will slow, and as a result, U.S. earnings will be impacted. That just not yet reflected in the data, but it is coming. So given the move higher in equities, it does feel like it's probably at the top end of a bit of a range that we might be in for, you know, for the time being. So some choppiness near term that was likely to continue. But given the fundamental story, it still seems to be relatively constructive. You know, the way we think of it is that, you know, pullbacks in the markets are opportunities to kind of phase and add exposure. Our year-end price target for the S&P is 5,800, so limited upside from here. But if we look to 2026, you know, the earnings growth the team expects is up 10% over a flat 2025. At some point, the markets will start to kind of price in that, you know, better outcome and sort of more forward-looking assumptions. And that could provide something, you know, a little bit more of a tailwind for equities to continue to move higher, assuming, again, that the trade deals, the progress on trade fronts, you know, continue to progress. The AI theme and the thesis that we like, and as a result, the tech sector that is attractive. You know, the data we've got in the past 2 weeks from corporate earnings are consistent with that. We think there continues to be sort of more upside in that sector. Then within the fixed income, we've seen rates actually decline a decent amount. The 10-year treasury yield got below, you know, 4.2%. We do think there's going to be sort of range bound, and there's certainly risk of the economy ends up being okay. You know, if rate cut expectations get dialed back, you know, going forward, that the 10-year could easily move back towards, you know, 4.5%. So we'd be cautious on taking a lot of interest rate risk and staying kind of higher quality overall. And finally, something that we've, you know, kind of advised repeatedly is that gold is attractive as certainly as a diversifier. It has pulled back a little bit recently given what appears to be like a better kind of risk environment overall. But again, if that, you know, proves to be somewhat fleeting, then gold should have another, you know, like higher. So it has fundamental support as central banks around the world continue to sort of diversify. So it's been a good 2 weeks for investors to kind of recover some of the losses. Some of the good news that, you know, perhaps already priced in for what could happen, but not maybe not speaking of bad news. And it'll be volatility that we've seen even on both the downside and the upside, that's likely to persist. So I think investors should not assume that we're in the all clear, because certainly the news flow on tariffs in particular can change very, very quickly.
Well, Jason, as always, a very helpful touch base on what's driving market momentum, thoughts on the state of the U.S. economy, what to expect going forward, and of course, guidance when it comes to asset allocation. So again, Jason, thank you for joining our listeners, our clients today from Switzerland. Do hope you enjoy your travels overseas and look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
You as well. Thank you, Jason. Again, today we've been joined by Jason Draho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. For you, our listener, do want to point you once again to Jason's latest blog, which we have been making reference to on today's podcast. A title is What If, now available up on UBS.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, please reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit UBS.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit UBS.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.